morning. It's the KBOO News for Tuesday, September 26th, 2006. A whole hour of news in just 30 minutes. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Becca Bartleson. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney has brought $500,000 into fellow Republican Ron Saxon's gubernatorial campaign coffers.
And Afghani leader Hamid Karzai and Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf will meet with Bush this week at the White House to decide how to continue the search for Osama bin Laden.
And in Baghdad, Saddam Hussein has been removed from the courtroom again and his trial postponed until October 9th. Portland area weather today, clear, highs in the 80s. Tonight, clear temperatures in the high 40s to low 50s. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney brought more than kind words for Republican gubernatorial candidate Ron Saxon at a weekend fundraiser. He brought a $500,000 check. Romney heads the Republican Governors Association, which has chipped in $750,000 to the Saxon campaign so far. Saxon appears to have a substantial financial edge in his race against Governor Ted Kulongoski. Saxon said the donation sent a message to local donors that national Republican strategists think he can win. Financial disclosure reports aren't out yet, but Saxon is outspending Kulongoski on television advertising. Romney, who may seek the presidency in 2008, also appeared at a fundraiser at the Benson Hotel that Saxon aides said raised $115,000. Kulongoski's campaign manager Jim Ross said the contribution shows how important this race is on the national level.
A former employee of the Ashland-based Islamic charity that's under investigation by the federal government says the group's founder was seduced by radical Islamic ideology. David Gartenstein Ross is a former Muslim who worked for Pete Sayer's Ashland-based Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation in 1999. Gartenstein Ross said Sayer knowingly gave prison inmates literature that called for killing non-Muslims and intentionally funneled money to Chechen rebels as outlined in a federal criminal case against him. Gartenstein Ross, who grew up in Ashland and left Al-Haramain in 1999 after 8 months there, testified last week before the U.S. Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee about Al-Haramain's Islamic evangelical program in U.S. prisons. The organization kept a database of more than 15,000 Muslim prison inmates who filled out graded questionnaires about their knowledge of Islam and listed where they planned to go after their release from prison. The program sent prisoners copies of a radical version of the Quran that includes a call to jihad or holy war against those who do not believe in Islam. There is no such thing, actually, as a radical version of the Quran. There is, in fact, only one Quran.
Mercy Corps, the global humanitarian organization that's based in Portland, will soon break ground on a new $35 million headquarters in a downtown neighborhood that's been targeted for redevelopment. The group is also planning another project near New York's Ground Zero. The buildings in Portland and in Manhattan will both feature centers designed to encourage people to fight world poverty and hunger. Neil Kenny Guire, Mercy Corps Chief Executive Officer, told the Oregonian that the nonprofit organization has narrowed its choices down to two potential headquarters sites in the city's historic Old Town District. Either site would involve a historic renovation and new construction. City officials said Portland would likely devote some urban renewal money to the project. Mercy Corps will support the projects with its first capital campaign. The 27-year-old relief and development organization, which operates in 42 nations, plans to boost its educational efforts, especially those reaching middle and high school students.
Oregonians are notably unenthusiastic about the prospects of genetically modifying crops to create drugs, according to comments turned into a 10-member committee on biofarming. Instead, most of the 30-plus people who commented are in favor of restricting or banning the use of plants to make medicines. A committee comprised of state agricultural and health officials and scientists issued draft recommendations last month encouraging and regulating biofarming. Oregon has no acreage planted with crops with altered genes to create pharmaceuticals, but field trials in other states have provoked debate over the issue. Benefits include possibly producing medications at low cost and introducing vaccines into food crops, but opponents say modified crops could contaminate food supplies or provoke allergic reactions through pollen.
The Bonneville Power Administration is proposing a policy change that could affect rates in the Pacific Northwest for generations. Northwest hydropower is one of the cheapest energy resources in the nation, about half the current market rate for electricity. Bonneville announced this summer it wants to change the way it charges utilities for its wholesale power to keep rates low. Bonneville proposes to make hydropower a separate resource while charging utilities a different rate for any additional power they want from the federal agency. Currently, utilities pay a blended rate that adds into the cost of developing resources or buying additional power to meet load growth. In exchange for low hydropower rate, utilities would have full responsibility for building the power plants or generating the extra electricity needed to meet growing demand past 2011, instead of the federal government. Utilities could still rely on the BPA to get them extra power, but they would have to pay higher tiered rates, which Bonneville hopes would will provide utilities with more incentive to either find ways to conserve electricity or generate it themselves.
According to Children First for Oregon's annual report card on the status of Oregon kids, which came out today, Oregon isn't making the grade for thousands of children. Dondria Warner reports.
The state received a D plus this year, thanks in part to large numbers of uninsured children, the lack of early childhood education, and the number of child abuse and neglect cases. Robin Christian with Children First says the state isn't doing its homework when it comes to kids.
The D plus grade really reflects mediocre public investments in kids and families, and we're seeing continued disinvestment.
Christian says the governor's Healthy Kids Plan is a good first step towards improving the grade. Announced yesterday, the plan promises health insurance for 117,000 uninsured kids in the state.
Governor Ted Kulongoski says he'll ask the 2007 legislature to approve a hefty cigarette tax to extend health coverage to uninsured children in Oregon. The move could put him on a collision course with Oregon House Republicans. The Democratic governor proposes boosting the state cigarette tax by 84 cents a pack, enough, he said, to provide health coverage to all 117,000 uninsured children in Oregon and to expand school-based health and dental programs throughout the state. Under Kulongoski's plan, Oregon's cigarettes tax would generate as much as $170 million for children's health programs in the next 2 years. Kulongoski's proposed cigarettes tax hike immediately became fodder in the governor's race. Republican Ron Saxon's campaign manager, Felix Schein, derided Kulongoski's cigarette tax as just the latest in a long line of tax increases that this governor has proposed. However, the cigarette tax hike will have the backing of Democrats who control the state Senate, as well as anti-smoking groups and others who have said Oregon voters have shown a willingness in the past to support cigarette tax increases.
Portland Police Chief Rosie Sizer is promising a speedy investigation into the death of James Chassie, a mentally ill man who died in police custody last week. Sizer says investigators would soon release a timeline and statements from officers and witnesses, and she expects the Multnomah County District Attorney to send the investigation to a grand jury. Officers spotted Chassie on a Portland street. The 42-year-old appeared to be on drugs or have a mental disorder. Witnesses say officers knocked Chassie to the pavement, landed on top of him, kicked him, and placed a taser gun to his torso. Nurses at the jail said Chassie needed medical care. Police took him to the hospital. Chassie died in the patrol car. A state medical examiner says that Chassie died of blunt force trauma to the chest. This from the Oregonian.
U.S. President George W. Bush will hold an unusual meeting this week with his counterparts from Afghanistan and Pakistan to deal with the resurgence of violence in Afghanistan. The reemergence of the Taliban sent NATO scrambling to persuade member nations to contribute soldiers and reflected the difficult challenge that remains in consolidating the Afghan government's authority while struggling to build up its army. Bush has had to contend with pressure at home as Democrats charge his administration went to war in Iraq at the cost of finishing the job in Afghanistan and finding Osama bin Laden. The Republican Party is expected to face a stiff challenge in November elections for control of Congress, in part over rising violence in Iraq. At the same time, Bush must find a way to get Karzai and Musharraf on the same page. The two leaders have clashed over Taliban and Al-Qaeda use of remote regions of Pakistani territory for sanctuary, while Musharraf downplaying their presence.
Republican Senator Arlen Specter says he will fight to give detainees the right to challenge their imprisonment. The move would create a new potential obstacle for legislation that President Bush wants in order to try terrorism suspects. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Specter said he would join Democrats working to amend a bill setting up trial procedures for foreign terrorism suspects that Republican leaders are trying to push through Congress this week. As it now stands, the bill, which the White House was forced to negotiate with a group of Senate Republicans, would bar inmates held at the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay from using habeas corpus petitions to challenge the legality of their detentions. While Specter said he would try to amend the bill, he said he would not use procedural tools to block it, and he would decide later how he would vote on it. Bush and top Republicans want Congress to pass the bill by the end of the week before lawmakers head out to campaign for November 7th elections that will determine control of Congress. This according to Reuters.
The United States has partly lifted its ban on liquids and carry-on bags on airline flights, a policy imposed last month after authorities in London said they foiled a plan to bomb U.S.-bound flights. Under the new plan, travelers may carry drinks and other items purchased in the secure areas of the airport. They may also bring travel-sized lip gloss, hand lotion, and other toiletries of 3 ounces or less that will be subject to screening and then placed in a small, clear plastic bag. The measure takes effect on Tuesday and is the second time the ban, introduced on August 10th, has been revised. Homeland Security officials called the latest change a prudent step, but said the main provisions will remain in place indefinitely because the threat of attacks on aircraft has not diminished. All liquids and gels were banned as carry-on items by U.S. officials last month after the British government arrested 2 dozen people and foiled what it said was a plot to simultaneously blow up several airliners using liquid explosives. The ban for U.S. airlines was eased a few days later to permit small amounts of non-prescription liquid medication, including pain relievers and cough medicines, as well as gels and other medicines for diabetics. This according to Reuters.
Former Enron CEO Andrew Fastow faces a federal judge today to find out how long he will spend in prison. Fastow agreed to forfeit $23.8 million and serve up to 10 years in prison when he pleaded guilty to participating in the massive fraud that led to Enron's bankruptcy in 2001. Experts said leniency is unlikely given Fastow's admitted wrongdoing beyond his guilty plea, including personally profiting from off-the-books deals at Enron's expense. Fastow will face U.S. District Judge Ken Hoyt, who rejected leniency in sentencing on another cooperating defendant, former Enron executive David Delaney, earlier this month. This according to Reuters.
The army is stretched so thin by the war in Iraq that it is again extending the combat tours of thousands of soldiers beyond the promised 12 months, the second such move since August. Soldiers of the 1st Brigade, 1st Armored Division, had been expecting to return to their home base in Germany in early January. Instead, they will stay in Iraq at least until late February, several officials said Monday. The soldiers are operating in western Anbar province, one of the most violent and dangerous parts of Iraq. Lauren Thompson, a defense analyst at the Lexington Institute, said the army is coming to the end of its rope in Iraq. It simply does not have enough active duty military personnel to sustain the current level of effort. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld declined to confirm the extension, but said that from time to time there may be units required to stay in Iraq longer than scheduled. He alluded to a pending announcement. The extension reflects a dilemma for army leaders: either keep one group of soldiers in Iraq longer than promised, or replace them with another group that has not yet had its minimum 12 months at home between combat tours. Either choice risks upsetting some soldiers and their families, and the fact that the choice cannot be avoided is a sign that troop rotations in Iraq are squeezing the army from several directions.
The Reverend Richard Sizek looks like a typical Washington lobbyist, but his is a mission with a difference. Sizek is persuading evangelical Christians to care about global warming. Sizek freely admits it's a job that tends to make strange political bedfellows, since the 60 million or so American evangelicals tend to be more concerned with social issues such as abortion and the war in Iraq than with tackling global climate change or other environmental problems. Sizek is part of an overall ecological push by evangelical Christians known as creation care, the notion that the environment is a divine creation and must be protected by humans. The movement included a highly successful pitch to evangelicals to use more fuel-efficient vehicles dubbed "What Would Jesus Drive?" The title was inspired by the popular bromide favored by Christians, including President Bush, "What Would Jesus Do?" This, according to Reuters.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad grabbed headlines last week by blasting U.S. policies from the dais of the U.N. General Assembly. But while their words were harsh, in many ways they merely expressed in bolder terms what a number of other world leaders and foreign diplomats believe. Anti-Americanism never really left the United Nations, but this year's gathering of world leaders demonstrated an unusually strident disrespect for the United States. The United States is perceived as weakened by a draining war in Iraq, while many of its adversaries feel emboldened with newfound oil wealth. Resentment of American power has also been exacerbated by the United States' close association with Israel during the recent war in Lebanon, and even the administration's campaign for greater democracy throughout the Middle East. A theme running through a number of speeches delivered here is that democracy cannot be imposed through force. The rising anger at American policies comes as some U.S. officials privately acknowledge that they feel stymied on many international fronts. The war in Iraq is going poorly, the drive for sanctions against Iran's nuclear program has faltered, the disarmament talks with North Korea are all but dead, the Israeli-Palestinian peace process is frozen, and the crisis in Sudan's Darfur region seems unsolvable. This from the Washington Post.
President Bush is pursuing closer ties to oil-rich Kazakhstan, despite what human rights observers have said is a disturbing backslide toward autocracy in the former Soviet Republic. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice did not answer when asked yesterday whether human rights or energy would top the agenda for a meeting with her Kazakh counterpart. The session, on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly, sets up a coveted White House invitation for Kazakh President Nursultan Nazarbayev on Friday. Nazarbayev's trip starts today with a private visit to the Bush family home in Maine to meet with his father, former President George H.W. Bush. Kazakhstan has grown in importance because of its huge oil reserves. The vast Central Asian Republic is expected to pump 3.5 billion barrels of oil a day in the coming decade. With the other four former Soviet Central Asian nations being more authoritarian, too unstable, too poor, or a combination of all three, Kazakhstan emerges as the West's logical ally in the strategic energy-rich region north of Afghanistan and Iran. The Bush administration also has praised Kazakhstan as a model because of its decision in the 1990s to dismantle nuclear weapons it acquired under Soviet rule.
The stadium that symbolized New Orleans' suffering during Hurricane Katrina last year has reopened. More than 30,000 people were more or less interned in the Louisiana Superdome after the storm struck. They lived in squalor for 4 days until they were evacuated. But a major refurbishment program allowed the venue to host yesterday's sellout game between the New Orleans Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. Many thought that afterwards the building would be condemned, but instead more than $200 million was spent on a huge renovation effort. Although some questioned spending so much on a sports stadium, the governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, described it as a vital symbol of recovery for the city and the state. This from the BBC.
A car dealership in Ohio has decided not to run a commercial proclaiming a, quote, jihad, unquote, on the U.S. auto market. The Ohio chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations released a letter from the dealership offering an apology and saying the radio ad, which had never been aired, was a misguided attempt at humor. Adnan Mirza, director of the group's Ohio office, said, "We appreciate the dealership's constructive reaction to feedback about the proposed advertisements. We accept the apology and hope that it and the decision not to air the spots will bring this incident to a close." The statement from the dealership, Dennis Mitsubishi in Columbus, said, "A large number of people have contacted us. Lots of them have seen the humor we were trying to convey, but far too many were clearly bothered by it. This was simply an attempt at humor that fell short." The group on Sunday complained publicly about plans for a commercial it said would have proclaimed a jihad on the U.S. auto market, offering Fatwa Fridays with sales representatives giving play swords to children. This, according to Reuters.
Let's go riding in the car, car. Let's go riding in the car, car. Let's go riding in the car, car. Let's go riding in the car.
The UN has said it will investigate the detention of the Venezuelan foreign minister as he tried to leave New York after a UN General Assembly session. Nicolas Maduro said he was mistreated by U.S. airport security staff in revenge for Venezuela's criticism of President Bush. He has refused to accept an apology from the U.S. State Department. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, has said the incident was Venezuelan street theater. Screeners at John F. Kennedy International Airport are said to have grown suspicious when Maduro used cash to purchase a one-way ticket to Miami shortly before the flight was due to leave on Saturday. Maduro told Venezuelan television that he was detained for an hour and 40 minutes and had his passport and plane ticket temporarily taken away. He said he was verbally abused, threatened with being strip searched, and that authorities at one point ordered him and other officials to spread their arms and legs and be frisked. He alleged this was a U.S. reprisal for a speech by Venezuelan's leftist president Hugo Chavez at the General Assembly's annual session, in which he called his U.S. counterpart the devil, a liar, and a tyrant. The U.S. State Department issued an apology, saying the airport security staff had questioned the foreign minister and then U.S. diplomatic security was sent to the airport to resolve the issue. This from the BBC.
Saddam Hussein's genocide trial was adjourned until early next month after a contentious session today marked by shouting matches and the ejection of the former leader from the courtroom for the second day in a row. All seven defendants argued loudly with the chief judge, Mohammed Arabi Al-Khalifa. Al-Khalifa is the judge who first removed Saddam from the court. The trial was adjourned until October 9th after a brief recess without the ex-president and his six co-defendants present in the courtroom. The judge said he wanted to give the defendants time to contact their lawyers or appoint new ones after days of disruptions. An official close to the court said later that Al-Khalifa also threw out the remaining five defendants before the recess. The outburst began when Saddam refused to remain silent after repeated requests to do so by the judge. Clutching his Quran, Saddam tried to make a statement, interrupting the prosecution's questioning of a witness. Saddam left with a smile, ejected from the courtroom for the second time in as many days. Saddam and his six co-defendants have been on trial since August 21st for their roles in the 1987-1988 crackdown against Kurdish rebels.
A UN inquiry into the killing of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri has found new evidence that he was probably killed by a suicide bomber. Its latest report says investigators believe a man who died in the February 2005 blast is likely to have detonated a truck bomb which killed Mr. Hariri. The report says new leads as to who was behind the attack in Beirut have been uncovered, but it does not elaborate. Syria has denied involvement in the blast, in which 23 people died. The report was delivered to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan on Monday by the inquiry's chief investigator, Belgian Serge Brummertz. It reinforces earlier suggestions that Mr. Hariri was assassinated by a large truck bomb. The document says a tooth found at the scene and believed to belong to the bomber had a distinctive crown, suggesting the attacker came from abroad, according to the Associated Press news agency. It says investigators found 32 pieces of what are believed to be the bomber's remains, putting him between 20 and 25 years old. A previous leader of the inquiry accused Syria of obstructing the investigation. This from the BBC.
Earth may be close to the warmest it has been in the last million years, especially in the part of the Pacific Ocean where potentially violent El Niño weather patterns are born. This doesn't necessarily mean there will be more frequent El Niños, but it could well mean that the wild patterns will be stronger when they do occur. James Hansen of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York City said the El Niño phenomenon is an important factor in monitoring global warming. What is significant, he wrote, is that 2005 was in the same temperature range as 1998 and probably was the warmest year ever, with no sign of the warm surface water in the eastern equatorial Pacific, typical of an El Niño. The waters of the western equatorial Pacific are warmer than in the eastern equatorial, and the difference in temperature between these two areas could produce greater temperature swings between normal weather patterns and El Niño. The scientists blamed this phenomenon on global warming that's affecting the surface of the western Pacific before it affects the deeper water, this according to Reuters.
A corruption probe that has brought down Shanghai's top leader is progressing further and others might be implicated, a Communist Party anti-graft official said Tuesday. Chen Lengyu, ousted as Shanghai Party Secretary yesterday, was the highest-level purge in a decade and comes amid moves by President Hu Jintao to consolidate his power. State newspapers splashed the case across the front pages today, carrying a dispatch from the official Xinhua news agency under identical headlines. Comrade Chen Lengyu under investigation for serious violations of party discipline. The General Secretary of the party's Discipline Inspection Commission promised the inquiry would run its course and anyone else involved would be punished. Chen is accused of aiding illegal businesses, shielding corrupt colleagues, and abusing his position to benefit family members, according to Xinhua. But corruption alone would not have been enough to sink an official at Chen's high level. The dismissal allows Hu to shore up his power base by removing a prominent protege of former President Jiang Zemin. The Shanghai case is believed to involve more than $500 million from a city pension fund.
Russia will ship fuel to a controversial atomic power plant it's building in Iran by March under a deal signed today. Tehran's nuclear chief met with a Russian security officer at the Kremlin. The agreement signed by Sergei Shmatko, head of the state-run company Atomtroy Exports, and Mahmoud Hanachyan, vice president of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, should allay Iran's complaints that Moscow is dragging its feet on supplying fuel for the Bashir plant. It will also renew concerns by the West, which accuses Tehran of seeking to enrich uranium in order to build nuclear weapons. Itar Tass reported that Shmatko met Hanachyan to sign an additional protocol setting out a time frame for starting up the Bashir plant. About 80 tons of fuel would be supplied. Meanwhile, the Russian Security Council chief insisted again on seeking a diplomatic solution to international concerns over Tehran's nuclear program at a meeting with the Iranian vice president.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, September 26, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Chris Andre. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland and Corvallis at 100.7 FM on Translator K264AA and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on Translator K220HR.
Portland area weather for today, clear, highs in the 80s. Tonight, clear, temperatures in the high 40s to low 50s.
We welcome you at KBOOT to volunteer in the AM newsroom. We really need your help. If you would like to be a volunteer, pick up that phone, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email her at amnews@kboo.org.